Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, Episode 2, for October 13th, 2006, The Windows Shiv. They call it Windows Weekly, well, in theory, because it's weekly, but we took a couple of weeks off because I was traveling, and but we're now going to be weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Hello, Paul.
Hello.
Good to talk to you. We did get you on TWiT to kind of make up for the missing Windows Weekly.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, actually.
Do you enjoy that?
I do. John Dvorak is a god of sorts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was.
Some would call him the devil, but okay. We'll,
yeah.
He's a deity.
No, he's the man.
Yeah, he is the man.
He's the man.
And quite a character, and he really makes TWiT, really. And
sure.
Sometimes people, I think, are a little intimidated. You know, I've had people come on TWiT and not say a word because he's a strong character.
He's a tough guy.
You held your own.
I think he said I was, did he say I was glib or what was the word he used? Cavalier.
Cavalier, maybe. That sounds like John.
Cavalier.
Don't take it personally.
No, it was funny.
He's been calling me names for 15 years. I'm used to it.
So no, it was good stuff.
We picked a good time to start a Windows podcast, I think intentionally, because Windows Vista is really starting to pick up steam. RC2, Release Candidate 2, came out. It's almost a week ago now.
Yep.
Is it much different than RC1? What's new in RC2?
No, it isn't much different. I've only noticed a few small things. So you get, you know, a single icon that's new in Control Panel, which I know is exciting.
What's it an icon for?
What is it? I knew you were going to ask me that. It is an icon for...
I'm watching Parallels right now.
I can't remember. Windows Sideshow.
Windows Sideshow.
Which is the next generation notebook computers and tablets are going to have that external display. And it's called, you know, the feature that interacts with it is called Windows Sideshow.
I'm confused. This is something different from a dual display.
Yeah, this
laptop.
Is a... What it will look like is a small PDA-type screen on the outside of a laptop. And the idea is that when your machine is closed, you can still look at your incoming email.
Like a phone. Okay.
Exactly, like a smartphone. Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. And they call it Sideshow.
Yeah.
Huh. But, of course, it won't make any sense on a machine that doesn't have that.
No. Yeah. Presumably, there'll be no circus music or anything. I don't know.
When are we going to see Sideshow-enabled laptops?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't believe they're... Well, I don't think we're going to see them in time for the holidays, but I could be wrong. I mean, they literally just showed me the same prototypes that they had back in January. So that doesn't suggest anytime soon, but I could be wrong. I'm not sure. So sometime within the next several months, certainly.
How much control does Microsoft have over these vendors? I mean, Microsoft's essentially saying, we think this is going to be great. It's going to add considerably to the cost and complexity of a laptop. Do the hardware vendors, Toshiba and Sony and Dell, just go, okay, sure, whatever you say?
Some of them do. Dell doesn't. You know, it's funny. You can always tell who Microsoft's closest partners are. And maybe closest partners isn't the right word, but the partners who are most comfortable working closely with Microsoft, companies like HP and Toshiba. Every time that Microsoft comes out with something new, whether it's a smart display or a, you know, PDA or something like that, they jump on board right away.
That's the one Microsoft shows at CES or wherever.
Exactly.
We have the Toshiba version.
Exactly. Yeah. Toshiba, HP, they tend to be right up there. But, you know, this time they actually went to original equipment manufacturers so that the companies who make laptops for the PC makers will actually be providing this hardware. So I think it will be pretty common. And the other interesting thing is that these little screens are actually really valuable in other places as well. You could picture them on the outside of a media center PC.
Oh, absolutely.
Even on the even a server in the future could have a little display like that on a blade, you know, right on the tip of the blade. So
it makes sense.
I could
actually
see.
Especially if you have a blade where you have a headless computer, you don't have a keyboard screen, it would be good to have some sort of information on there.
Right. So I think this one's going to take off.
Interesting. It's also a differentiator against Apple, which doesn't do anything like that.
Exactly. Apple would never sully the beauty of their machine with another box, you know.
We have a glowing Apple. We don't need anything else.
Exactly.
What
more
would we put on there? So I'm unclear. Is it a separate device or is it actually in the lid of the laptop?
It depends. There's going to be both. So there'll be the versions that it is literally in the lid of the laptop. It's unmovable. There'll be versions where you can actually slip out that little piece and bring it around like a little mini PDA. And then there'll be versions where you can actually use your cell phone and wirelessly get that information to an external display. So
it's not touch sensitive. It's there's no input. It's just a display.
No, you can touch it. You can touch it. So you can trigger. Yeah. So there'll be I get these confused too. Gadgets and widgets. These are
Microsoft's
are
gadgets.
So there are gadgets for Sideshow that are just like the gadgets for the sidebar. And Microsoft has created some.
This is really confusing.
Yeah. Well, it's even worse because there's a third category of gadgets, gadgets that go online on live.com. And all of these things are similar but not identical.
Right.
So if you created a media player, for example, and you wanted some way to control the playback of music from all three of those locations, you'd actually have to create three different gadgets, right?
gadgets, yes. Are they written in JavaScript? I know Apple's widgets were JavaScript, and so are the Stardock widgets. So this is another JavaScript.
Very, very similar. XML, JavaScript, HTML.
Yeah. Yep. I think that by now, developers probably have a pretty good idea of how to write these things.
They do, but it would be nice, you know, as we were talking on Twit, it would be nice if there were a single standard for this stuff.
Sure. I mean, they're so close. It wouldn't be that hard.
They're all the same. Yeah.
They're very close.
They're
right now
oddly similar. One would say suspiciously similar.
Yes. Well, it's just Ping graphics, you know. Now, I installed RC2 on Parallels on my Mac Pro, and it runs fine, but it doesn't give me Aero because the virtualization is not capable of showing Vista that I have a high-end graphics card. It fooled me at first because it looks good. I thought, I'm seeing this beautiful gradient on the toolbar or the taskbar, but I'm not. So what I'm not getting because I'm not getting Aero is the transparent top of the window and
just
the little rotate thingy when you shift applications.
I don't think the rotate thingy is the technical term. So you don't get flip 3D. Is that what you mean?
Flip 3D. That's what I'm talking. Yeah.
Right. You don't get that. You don't get icon previews or taskbar button previews, I guess you would call them.
That's a nice feature. Yeah, actually.
Yeah, that's kind of a neat little thing.
So when you have applications running in the taskbar, it pops up a thumbnail of the application.
That's right.
As you hover over it.
Yeah, that's about it.
That's the most useful one, if you ask me. I don't see any use out of the rest. The rest is just eye candy, yeah?
Yeah, and even that arguably is eye candy, although it's certainly useful. But yeah, that you're just missing a few visual things. And
so people who are freaking out that, oh gosh, I don't have enough video card to run Glass, big deal.
But you know, that's also a little overblown. I think people are going to be surprised by how many different machines, unless you have an older integrated video type system, you're going to get Glass pretty much. So.
Even the newer Intel, the GMA 950 that Intel designed, it supports it, which is a motherboard video.
Yes.
Pretty common.
That's in the Mac Pro, the MacBook, not MacBook the MacBook Pro, but the MacBook, integrated video. Yep. And the Mac Mini.
So there's a new
Sideshow icon.
And what else is new in RC2?
One feature that people had been asking for is that Microsoft made a nice customization feature in Vista where you can go into that personalized dialog box and choose different colors and appearances. And the problem is, even though they're different colors, you know, blue and teal and red and so forth, when you maximize those windows, the maximized windows always look black before. And people asked them if they could just colorize those. So they did, and that's in RC2. And I don't colorize my windows, so I don't really care one way or the other. But I assume there are seven or eight people out there that are excited by that. So that's in there. And as far as you know, things that are sort of under the hood, obviously lots of bug fixes and so forth. And I noticed lots of compatibility changes. So, for example, I don't get that compatibility error dialog that I used to get with Adobe Photoshop Elements 4.0 anymore.
Ah, that's good.
So that seems to work fully, which is nice. And that's gone. That was a roller coaster ride over the last, you know, several releases as to how well that particular application worked. It went sort of went up and down, if you can believe it, over time. But that appears to be stable.
Somebody once told me that, and I'd love to get your take on this, that there are whole departments at Microsoft whose sole job it is to modify Windows code so it works with existing software. In other words, just literally writing specific patches to make sure that Elements works, to make sure that all these...
Yeah, I don't know about the size and scope of it, but there are certainly people doing that. And those things are called shivs, which is a...
It's a prison term for a homemade knife.
Right. Exactly. So they could have said stent.
They could have said
stent. Stent's another. Excellent word.
What do they call those little shims? They could have called it a shim.
Yes.
But no, they called it a shiv. Okay. Yes. Well, that just tells you how they feel about it. It does, impact the reliability of Windows. I know there are thousands of these in Windows XP.
They're all over the place, right? Yeah. And as you get closer and closer to the end of the development cycle, more and more of these will go in. But, you know, I know that there are people at Microsoft who hate to have this sort of thing in there, but they also recognize that, you know, compatibility is job one. So Adobe has to run, you know, all these third-party applications that people use have to run. You know, there are going to be special cases, especially with corporations that have developed their own applications where you'll have to do that work yourself. And Microsoft actually has an application compatibility toolkit that they provide.
ShivMaker?
ShivMaker.
Yeah.
To ShivMaker 2007.
Yeah.
it allows... And this is something even a power user
Visual
can get,
Shiv
right?
Studio?
Visual
Studio.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
No need to use the command line version. So you can run through a wizard and it will look at the application and attempt to make it work properly, and we'll get rid of all those dialogues. So there's a lot of work. That's always been a big effort at Microsoft. And in some ways, on a technical level, I think it might be holding Windows back.
Well, I think it's part of the burden of success, really, isn't it? I mean, you have so many independent software vendors supporting your platform, depending on your platform, and so many, you know, millions of clients, customers who are using those programs, you kind of have an obligation. Legacy has always been the bane of Microsoft's existence, I think.
Exactly. It's the weight of the world. And, you know, on the flip side, I think you could say, in Apple's case, that's one of their strengths, that they don't really have to deal with that.
And they have shown that. I mean, they've been willing to say to their users, sorry, your Mac will not work anymore after this.
Sorry. No more classic apps.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Microsoft does these things, but they do them much more slowly. They have to. So
I got the sense that the original intent of Vista was to be more like that, to really, you know, with the WinFS and various other new technologies, to leave the old stuff in the dust and kind of intentionally. As time went by, they compromised.
Yeah, it's absolutely a compromise. I'm not sure if the original vision included less compatibility. I mean, if you think back to 2003, they did a demo of, I want to say, was it DBase in DOS?
DBase
running on
2?
Longhorn? Yeah, something like that. Some crazy old 20-year-old application. And they were trying to say, see, you know, we care.
Yeah, but a lot easier to make a DOS application still work, to be honest with you.
Yeah. No, some of the stuff that they do... in Windows Vista to make applications think that they're running on an older operating system, which is absolutely incredible.
Is there a compatibility mode? I gather there is from what you just said, much like there was in XP?
Yeah, it's exactly like it was in XP, except now XP is an option on that list.
You add to the list.
Yeah.
You have on your winsupersite.com, the supersite for Windows, you have screen captures for both RC1 and RC2. And so for those of us who can't get AeroGlass, we can at least see what it might look like. It's so pretty. I do like, you know, what I do like, it's a silly thing, but the wallpapers that come with Windows Vista are much prettier.
No, that's not a silly thing. Yeah, they are nice. I think that's one of those little things that Apple always got right that Microsoft, you know, never really got the fit and finish thing down. And that's a little thing, like you said, but it really impacts, you know, people's experience with Windows every day.
It's the first thing you see.
Yeah, you put something nice up there, it makes a big difference.
Yeah. I do notice with the glass, for instance, things like Windows Media Player 11 with the kind of translucent controls does, I mean, that's pretty. That is very attractive.
Yeah.
So, they're, you know, if you're playing something like that, if you have a window like that that's open while you're doing other things, it might be nice to have that translucency.
Right. And I think that was the point. You know, you have a bunch of these things open at one time. You can you get a sense of depth, and you can see what's behind and that there is something behind and so forth. Although, you know, I don't know why I'm bringing up Apple so often this week, but that's another thing that Apple has gotten right, right? I would say over time in macOS X, they experimented with transparencies and translucencies. And in the beginning, they kind of went whole hog on that, and they've toned it down a little bit. And I think Microsoft needs to get a little bit of maturity there with the transparencies. And I think they will over time. And even during the beta, we've seen them, you know, they've changed it, and they've added that ability where you can actually just turn it off if you don't want any transparencies. Right. You can just turn
you
them
can
off.
There's Windows Classic. You can have the old, you can look like Windows 2000 if you want.
Yes, and that is, that's just horribly painful, but I know, well, I know people, you know, people will
corporate
want that.
World, that's, I think there are a lot of people who would like that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
They want that button down look. I know, it's so much prettier now, frankly, than it was before. I kind of like it. It is interesting that you bring up Apple so much, but I don't think you'll be alone. I think that inevitably, partly because of Apple's campaign to make it seem this way, but inevitably the press is going to say, well, look, Vista is just doing what Mac OS X Tiger did 8 months ago.
Absolutely.
Do you feel that that's the case? Or
I do. And one of the things I've said a lot, and I think people have misunderstood it, is, you know, Microsoft... and I feel bad about this, but they, you know, in 2003 at that developer event, they came out and they said, look, this is what we're going to do. It's humongous. We're doing all this stuff, you know, and it was the first time they ever really came out in that big of a way. 3 years later, they haven't done any of it. In fact, they've dropped a lot of it.
WinFS.
WinFS is a big one, obviously.
What was it? Mono, the command line?
Oh, Monad. No, that's, Monad. That's, they're still doing it, but it's not in Vista. It's still coming, but it's a separate component.
WinFS is dead, is completely dead.
WinFS is dead. Although, well, as a separate product, it's dead, yeah. I think we're going to see relational database, you know, data storage engine stuff happening, but...
What else,
you know, what else is missing?
Was on the roadmap that didn't...
The end is listless, as they say. there was so much down there. I mean, one of the big things I really enjoyed about the early Vista builds back when it was still called Longhorn was this, the old sidebar. Not the sidebar we have now, but the old version. And they were going to get rid of that tray notification area. And that the sidebar was going to be a place for notifications. And the idea was that in the not-so-distant future at the time, everyone would have widescreen displays.
Right.
And we'd have this extra real estate.
Yeah. Yep.
Why not use that to display notifications? And well, this will be the one-stop shop. So you can have your clock over there, your little calendar things will come up, your little toast slices from Windows Messenger or whatever. All that stuff could be, you know, be there. It would be like a standardized environment, you know. And they had to kill that. It was just too big of a thing to do. And, of course, now there's, sadly, there's a sidebar, and it's just a...
It's a gadget bar.
It's a gadget holder.
First thing I did was turn it off. I mean, it's cool, it's pretty, but I just turned it off. First of all, mainly because you can have the gadgets live anywhere. You don't have to live in a sidebar.
Right.
I never liked Google's sidebar either. Google tried the same thing. And
Yeah, no, Microsoft had one in MSN Explorer for a while. There's all kinds of versions of this. Some people like them, some don't. I tend to turn it on, look at it, and then realize I never use it and turn it off.
It's pretty. So. It takes up real estate. And I have a big screen. I have wide screens, but it doesn't do anything for me. IE7 will actually be out before Windows Vista will. In fact, there was briefly on Dig, and I think it was a spurious story, the rumor that it would be pushed out as part of Windows Update on Tuesday. Not so.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Yeah, whoever wrote that, actually, I think that generated through Washington Post, and that story was incorrect. To the tune of Microsoft
would never do that. That's crazy.
Oh, no, they're doing it. They're just not doing it on Tuesday.
Oh. Why would you force somebody to upgrade your browser? That seems like a very risky thing to do.
Yes, so it's a little more complicated than that. But as far as the release date, it will be this month sometime. It wasn't going to happen Tuesday. It won't happen this week. But.
So clarify for me, if I have automatic Windows updates turned on in XP and I'm running IE6, it will automatically change to IE7?
No. What you will get is they're overriding the default functionality. So if you, like you described, if you have automatic updates on auto install, which a lot of people do, I'm sure millions of people do that. what you will get when you wake up in the morning the next day is a dialogue on your screen that says, we'd like you to read this. And it will have information about IE7. And it will say, these are the reasons why we think you should install it. And you can choose then to do it or not do it. There's no default choice, so you can't hit enter by mistake and have it install or anything like that. So, yes, it is going to be pulled down automatically, but it won't be loaded onto your system.
No, and what are the compelling arguments for installing IE7?
Oh,
is it more secure? Well,
yes,
mainly, security would be the number one reason.
Security and functionality. Yeah, there's all kinds
of
stuff.
I like the tabs. I mean, there's a lot of functionality. Mm-hmm. But I guess the real question is, am I going to be safer in IE7 than I am in IE6?
You know, we'll have to wait and see several months. Microsoft asked me last week, we were talking about IE7 and the coming RTM release, and they said, well, you know, where do we have to get to so that people begin trusting us again? You know, what do we do to gain back trust?
They asked
internet?
You that?
Yeah, they were just not... They were just curious what my opinion was about
that.
I said, you can't do anything. You have to wait for time to go by. You know,
trust is earned. It's
trust
not
is
a
earned.
Switch
yeah.
you flip.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife tells me that all the time.
Okay. And that's another show, Leo.
That's a whole other show. But my kids do, too. It's like, Dad, we'll trust you when you come through 4 or 5 times in a row.
There you go.
Not just because you say, okay, really, I'm better now. This is a secure browser now. Trust me.
Yes, I feel like it's like a dog who's been kicked one too many times.
Yeah,
you know,
I
know that the people working on Internet Explorer are not the people who let this thing sit for years and have nothing have no upgrades occur.
Right.
I know that these guys care. I know that they're doing a great job. I know that there are future versions coming. They're
we
good
should
guys.
Recap that because I don't know if everybody knows that happened. That IE would just lay. Idle for a year or so. Nobody was doing anything.
Oh, well, more than
a year.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
was the team fired? Were they moved on? What happened?
Yeah, I think that internally, you know, it's funny, the guys who did IE have moved around a lot at Microsoft. And interestingly, they've always moved on to whatever the next big thing was going to be. So for a while, they were doing the Windows shell, right, when they integrated
So these were the good guys. They were the heroes.
Yeah.
And because they did such a good job, they got promoted. But nobody came in to replace him.
I think what they saw in these guys was a lot of youth and a lot of excitement and, you know, energy. And unfortunately, you know, when they melded that thing with the shell, they got something bad.
You don't want youth real energy in a shell. Sorry.
No, I don't mean it like that. But I mean, it was just, you know, this is something that by nature connects to the internet. You know, careful there. So it was like a wide open tunnel to the shell. So we're still suffering the side effects from that. But they moved on to MSN Explorer for a little while when MSN was going to be the next big thing. So now, you know, when you look at there are people doing the Windows shell and there are different people doing Internet Explorer. And IE7 has awesome security advances. It has excellent functionality advances. So it's almost on par with, Mozilla Firefox. You can download a few simple add-ons if you want to upgrade to the things that are actually missing from IE7.
Recommendation would be when that day comes sometime later this month, you wake up and you get this message, say yes, install IE7.
Absolutely. There's no reason not to get IE7.
Well, there's one reason from my point of view as a web, as a web developer. There are some cosmetic issues. For instance, our Twitch site does not render, at least in the current IE7, does not render properly.
Yes. Well, and you should be talking to them about that because one of the big pushes they've had over the past few months is working with people doing, you know, major sites especially, where they want to make sure that IE7 works properly.
Well, I have to wonder. I mean, as far as I know, and I'm pretty sure, my site is standards compliant. So the fact that it's not rendering well in IE7 doesn't bode well.
Right.
Is it that the standard is so loose that you can't, you know, I mean, I'll tell you what doesn't work. It's the comment box. And instead of going across the page, it's like 3 pixels wide. And that works in every other browser.
Right.
Including Internet Explorer 6. So I worry that that may be just the tip of the iceberg in terms of compatibility.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there are going to be instances of that. I actually wish you could run both browsers side by side so that if there was a problem, you could right click and say open in IE6 or something. But
yeah, well, maybe somebody will do something like that. That's possible.
Yeah.
When you install IE7, is 6 gone?
There's no
going back.
Right.
Can you
uninstall?
You can go back.
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yep.
So you can try it and a week later say, you know, I'm going to go back to 6 for the time being.
Right.
And
and I think the only time to do something like that is if you do run into sites that you visit regularly that don't work, that might be a time when you can say, okay, well, right, maybe I need to get out of here. But I think that stuff's really going to get ironed out pretty quickly. Except maybe on your site. I don't know. That's a deal. I'll have to look at that.
Now that I've said that, I'm sure it'll fix it. But it worries me that, I don't believe we're doing anything too weird.
Right.
So
there's something you can put on your web pages to force IE7 to work in a backwards compatibility mode. Hmm.
Part of the problem was IE, and part of the problem was IE6 was so awful that there are many, and many websites will have these workarounds where they test for IE6, and if they find IE6, they do something different. What may be happening, and I don't know, I'll have to really look at the code, is we may be testing for IE6. IE7 may report something, you know, it may say, it may do the same thing IE6 did, and then barf on the special IE6 code. You know, that's usually how the workarounds work, is we'll put something in that only IE6 will understand. The rest of the browsers will just go,
sure,
I don't know.
And actually, you know, the success of IE6 in the marketplace anyway is part of IE7's problem. You know, they can't go far enough.
There'll be a lot of IE6 workarounds that IE7 has to deal with.
Yeah. It would be so nice if this thing was just standards compliant and that was the end of the story.
Yeah, and it's partly the standards' fault. I don't think it's all Microsoft's fault. The standards are all over the place, so...
Well, right. But, I mean, I it seems like Firefox, Opera, even Safari do a better job of at least adhering to those standards.
They seem to handle it.
Yeah.
They'll
get there.
Is this a legacy issue again?
Yeah. This is exactly the same thing. Yeah. Exactly. Victim of their own success.
A couple of news stories before we wrap up that you wrote about. You have another site called Internet Nexus, which I actually like reading. It's kind of it's your kind of more of a news blog. Here's what's happening outside the Windows.
Outside of Windows,
Ray Norda passed away.
Yeah.
The CEO of the man who really put Novell on the map retired about 10 years ago, I think.
He is the classic example, you know, back in the pre-internet days, especially when so many companies, you know, Borland and Novell and Apple even, you know, were just... had tunnel vision, you know, we're going to defeat Bill Gates.
It was all about beating Bill.
Yeah. And God, what an awful mistake that was. I was actually doing computer support at a community college out in Arizona when that happened. And I remember having to go through Novell's support channels to try to get support for WordPerfect. And it was my first experience with the Windows registry, which was just a nightmare, you know. But, God,
little
that was
you
just
know,
such
this
a
would
disaster.
Be your old friend, your nemesis for years to come.
Yeah.
In fact, the registry lives in, I'm disappointed to say, lives on in Vista.
That's another thing they were supposed to get rid of.
But, you know, there's no way you can get rid of it. It's like getting rid of win.ini and system.ini.
Well, they could virtualize it, which is what I think they will do. And you can have basically a per folder, per application manifest, which I think is also what they're going
to
do going forward.
That's
so you don't
have
this.
That's what you
have. Yeah, this
to do.
Awful spaghetti
a blob.
Thing of,
you've got a giant blob. That anything goes wrong, everything goes wrong.
Right.
Which is crazy. So Ray Norda, in fact, wasn't able to defeat Bill Gates, but did, in fact, buy WordPerfect and Quattro Pro and put together an office suite and later went on to kind of move. I think he was still there when the Linux movement started for Novell.
Yes, and that was actually pretty smart, I think. So, you know, they could sense that the end was coming for NetWare, although it's still kicking around in a small way today. And they basically looked at the market and said, "Well, what do we have to do here?"
Yep. A pioneer gone. You also mentioned Michael Robertson, the man who started MP3.com, and he's, of course, runs Linspire now, and he's got a new company. But I don't know if I'd agree with him, but he said that the Zune will be the flop of 2007 with fewer than 50,000 units sold worldwide. You agree?
Right. I don't think I wrote this. My initial thought when I read that was thinking, you know, this is coming from the guy who has sold less than 50,000 units of a know, Linux operating system.
Or,
but
not exactly
maybe that's,
consumer electronics maven.
That's
point.
So, but you know, obviously this guy became rich in the MP3 space. I guess is how we put it, right? I mean, so he certainly understands the music market, but You see, you've seen one, and I know you like this thing.
I liked the form factor. Well, I think where Michael might be on target, he's talking about mostly about the DRM. He's saying that the copy protection in Zune and the plays for sure isn't supported, and just the way it's done is going to kill it.
There's nothing like sending mixed messages.
Yeah, it doesn't support Microsoft's own plays for sure, which is bizarre.
Right. The way that market has turned out has surprised me in ways I'll never be able to fully describe, but I do remember years and years ago talking to Microsoft about, they didn't call it Plays for sure, but their Windows Media Platform, and you know, they were going to do the same thing they did in the PC market. You know, they were going to work with partners. There would be partners who would sell services. There were partners that were going to sell devices. You know, it was a big ecosystem, you know, of choice, right? Lots and lots of music stores, lots of video stores.
Didn't work out.
Sounded like
way.
A great... I didn't. Well, yeah, it's all there, but nobody uses it.
Right.
The fact that they are going their own way with the Zune is alarming to me, but maybe for different reasons than it's alarming to other people. I think what they basically did was say, "Hey, look, you know, we made this Xbox. We did that our own way. It was successful. Let's do it again." Mm. And I don't know that that's going to work a second time. You know. And I don't know that this device is different enough. I don't know that...
I think if you take the DRM off this device, it's a great device. It's got a better screen than the iPod, certainly a usable screen for watching video. It actually has a great UI. Clearly, the influence...
That sort of overlay...
Yeah.
But that's something, you know, I would just compare that to Windows Media Player 11. A year ago, Microsoft provided people with the first beta version of this, and they have these awesome, you know, visualizations with album art and all this stuff, and it stacks. It's just a beautiful application. And then they sat on it for a year. Yeah. It still hasn't come out. They're going to release the final version later this month. But Apple, all they had to do was release iTunes 7.
Yep.
And now it's over.
Yep.
So I can't help but think that Apple, even as soon as next month, could just do something very similar.
They can respond immediately. Everyone knows they're sitting on a comparable machine with Wi-Fi, big screen, touch controls.
So what happens when the True Video iPod comes out and it's the size of an iPod, but that whole thing is a screen?
Right.
You know, suddenly no one's going to be talking about Zune anymore.
Be interesting. I mean, I think that it's kind of hard to analyze it in a vacuum because it is part of a larger world, including a world that includes Apple. But by itself, it's appealing. Yeah. It's a very appealing machine.
It's
a good price, $250.
From where I'm sitting right now in my office, I can actually see at least two devices that at one time or another were going to be the next big thing. I'm serious.
What are they?
One of them is a Rio Carbon.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a little 4 gigabyte MP3 player. Beautiful. I mean, fits nice in your hand. Gorgeous. I remember the guys from the Windows Digital Media team, ecstatic that someone had come out with this device. Rio no longer sells MP3 players at all. They're out of the market.
They're gone.
And the other one is a, I forgot the name of it, the little Clix device, Samsung Clix.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Two gigabytes. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. This company has been really slow coming out with larger capacity versions. And as a result, even though it has a nice screen, nice form factor, it's got a crazy interface. We actually click on the corners of the screens. I bet they've sold 16 of these things. You know, it's just a complete non-starter.
So your point is that it doesn't matter if you've got a great product. You have to survive in the world.
It's not enough.
In the iPod world, frankly.
You can't just come out with something that is iPod 1.1. Yep. You know, it has to be so much better. And I just don't, you know, I don't know. I just don't get that vibe from this.
All right. You, in other words, agree with Michael Robertson. This could be the flop.
Yeah, and I think that's what I wrote my blog. Did I say,
did.
God help me?
So, you said, I feel dirty, is what you said.
Yes, there you go. It feels uncomfortable, but yes, I agree with him.
It's hard to say. You know, we shall see. We shall see. I think you both make excellent points, and I, you know, more and more as I talk to people, the prevailing trend among the digerati is that DRM is dead. That, in fact, DRM, copy protection, cannot survive, and anything that is so tied to copy protection is dead with it. I'd love to see that. I find it hard to believe. But
well, I mean, right now you can't escape DRM, but I won't buy music from a service that offers unless they offer really high quality songs that I can then you know, rip to CD, I guess burn to CD and then rip back in MP3. I have an iPod. There's no AAC files on there, or, right, you know, any protected right content.
I think that's ultimately what's going to happen. Consumers just won't buy protected content. Right. And as soon as that happens,
I had a nightmare just this week with Amazon. I bought some, Amazon came out with that Unbox service, right?
Oh, the worst DRM. Oh God.
Last month there was a free, you could get one free TV show, and I purchased a movie, and I'm a fairly technical guy. You know, I feel like I know my way around the computer a little bit.
If Paul Theroux can't figure it out, I think it's doomed. Let's face it.
Literally 2 days ago, I spent 30 minutes on the phone with somebody trying to get this thing to work.
That's awful.
Told me that, I had supposedly installed this on three different computers. Suspiciously, they all had the same name. And I said, listen, I have never successfully downloaded either one of these shows. I have never successfully watched either one of these shows.
Wow.
And I eventually just said, look, I want my money back, and I'm never going to do this again. I'm sorry.
And I suspect Amazon's got to be hearing that from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Flop out of the door. I mean, if you want the flop of 2007, Unbox, maybe.
It's terrible.
It might be the flop of 2006, frankly. Doesn't take too long. Well, it's always good to talk to you, Paul, and to get the latest scoop on Windows. We'll be back next week and every week. We are still working on album art. Microsoft, please don't sue us. We know it's your logo. We really do. And we've got a great logo featuring Paul's face. And I don't think anybody except maybe your mom will sue us over that.
I wouldn't call it great, but it is
well, it's
certainly accurate in a very creepy way.
Nitrozak and Snaggy from the Joy of Tech do all of our caricatures for the twits. And it's always fun when I have a new twit. To deliver
onto the guillotine.
Yes. I send them a picture and they get back a caricature. And you know, the reactions are varied, but most people have that same shudder that you have, Paul. But you'll get
used to it. Yeah, I recognize the realism and I am horrified by it.
You'll see it on the album art probably next week. Somebody complained that the music sounds like a corporate, canned corporate music. It is not. It is not. In fact, it's good music. It's real music. It's by a fellow named Derek K. Miller, who is a musician and writer and editor in Vancouver. And his website is penmachine.com. And he very kindly allows us to use the music. He has actually other PodSafe music on his website, penmachine.com. So, I like this music.
But I asked for something bombastic.
It's not bombastic, I have to say.
We didn't, no.
I'll work
this
on
this is probably
bombastic.
Better. I like this better than bombastic.
Do you like the music? Is it okay?
Yeah.
I never asked you, actually.
No, it doesn't matter.
You
know, no, it's fine.
You can
like
have
it.
Anything you want.
I can have anything I want?
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that offline.
The Rolling Stones, I can talk to them. And they're Windows fans.
Oh, and that's something we didn't talk. We didn't talk about your adventures in Ontario. We'll have to do that next time.
Oh, the Podcast Expo. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You are a famous man.
Only among a very small group.
Well, I don't know.
It's an interesting thing, though.
You were all over the news last week.
Yeah, well, you know, I was promoting this notion of Netcast, and that got some traction for reasons I don't completely understand.
Right.
You might as well call it Zoomcast as call it podcast. It's just...
I do get pedantic emails from people who tell me that, you know, yeah, we really wish you would support the Netcast standard because, you know...
It isn't a standard. It's nothing. It's just my way of saying I don't think podcast is the best name. But, you know, it is the word of the year according to some dictionary, and it is in the dictionary, and it's out there. So people are always going to call it podcast, and I know that, but I want people to know that you don't have to have an iPod to listen to this. You could listen to it if you wanted to on your Rio Carbon.
Oh, God. You sad little man. Whoever you are out there.
There is somebody, I'm sure, who will send you an email saying, I love my Rio Carbon.
Speaking of which, I'll be selling a slightly used Rio Carbon in the coming week.
Good.
Absolutely.
You do that, by the way, and people should go to the your internet nexus because you occasionally will mention old gear that you're
I do get and I give away books and my little slice of karma and we sell because I have all this junk, you know, and it seems like it would be valuable to somebody, but it's just taking up space. So.
I see you're reading The Stand and like The Stand, mm-hmm. which I loved too. It's Stephen King's 8,000 page plague novel
I wish it just kept happening.
It is. It's kind of, you get, by the time you get to page 600 or 700, it's a world you're part of. It's really great.
Exactly.
Have you ever read George Stewart's Earth Abides?
No, I haven't.
1947, one of the great science fiction works, and it's a similar thesis that there's a plague that hits the world. And if you like The Stand, it's not as long or as engrossing, but I think you'll like it.
I'll look into that.
Earth Abides, just our little recommendation of the week.
we'll have a music recommendation next week.
Yeah, I'd love that. And you know, Paul, you use, I'm sure, a lot of different Windows programs and shareware and stuff. And mm-hmm. One of the things we've been doing on Mac Break Weekly, which has been very popular, is picking a program or something that people might want to take a look at. So if you want to start doing that too, I know you see a lot of stuff. Please, anytime.
Okay,
we'd like to hear your recommendations. We'll start next week. I won't put you on
the spot
this week unless there's something you really like.
Well,
what's your hot game for Xbox right now?
Lego Star Wars 2.
You love
the
that
original trilogy.
Is this something you play with your kids or something you play yourself?
You actually, you know, you don't have to, but you almost have to play it with two people. So my son can play it by himself, but he always comes in and says, "You got to help me get past this point."
What's
better with two people?
How old is your son?
Eight.
Perfect.
It's a fun game. I mean, listen, I'm actually really into violent first-person shooter games.
Yeah,
this game is cute and nobody dies, and it's fun, and it's fun for all ages.
Occasionally, a little Lego head will pop off, but you can just put it right back on.
They come right back on. Yeah, the people hop around on one leg or something. It's actually absolutely.
I'm buying it right now for my son. Since I did take Grand Theft Auto off the Xbox, I really should probably put Star Wars, the Lego version, Star Wars 2. On it's Xbox, not Xbox 360.
It's on both.
It's on both. Okay. Much better on the 360. Should I buy a 360?
I've played it on Windows and on the Xbox 360, and it's identical on both. So,
okay.
My guess is the graphics are not particularly high end, right? I mean, they look like little toys, but
HD Lego, baby. All right, Paul.
Let me throw out one recommendation.
Oh, good. All right.
Because these guys have been really cool, and I had written something about Firefox and Internet Explorer a while back, and some guys wrote me and said, "Hey, we're going to do what you've been asking for, which is add what I call this thing inline find, but what it really is inline search, and that's that feature where you hit Control F on Windows and you bring up a little find dialog in Internet Explorer." Well, in Firefox, that little find dialog is not a dialog. It's a pane at the bottom of the window.
Right.
And I find that hugely excellent. You know, just it's
great,
not in the way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So these guys created a version of this for Internet Explorer, and it works in Internet Explorer 7. So it is called, let me see if I can find it here. Actually, what you need to do is just go to www.ieforge.com, IEFORGE. And they have created an extension that is called Inline Search. And it basically duplicates that functionality in Internet Explorer. And it's you know,
is that
it's
for IE 7 only? Or
no, it works in previous versions as well.
That's great. I would absolutely love that. Not that I've used Internet Explorer in some years, but I suppose I'll be using 7.
I have to use it sometimes because obviously at this point I'm still testing things, and this is one of those things that eases the pain a little bit. So if you're a Firefox user and you're looking at IE7 and you like what you see, and this is one of those things that will help you make the switch because it's one of those great Firefox features.
I don't see an IEForge.com.
Okay, I'm looking at it right now. So it's
I did something wrong.
FORGE.com.
IEFORGE.com.
www.ieforge.com.
There it is. Okay. Ben's IE to your will.
There you go.
That's
click
what
on
I want.
And it's the first extension.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul Theroux. We'll talk to you next Friday and every Friday.
Thank you, sir.
As we look at the wonderful, wacky, wild world of Windows. It's Windows Weekly. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time.